Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the SOM TV podcast. My name is Jason Wise. On today's episode, if you've ever studied for an exam in the wine space, or you have ever tried to pick up a bottle of German wine, you've noticed a lot of very difficult text. Germany is filled with some of the most complex laws in the entire wine world. We have our very own Claire Kopy and Minneapolis-based sommelier Amy Waller, who's an ambassador for wines of Germany and a specialist on German wine laws. We're going to go deep today, guys. Wine nerds unite, because today's podcast is for you. Before we do that, I want to remind everybody, Tournament of Bubbles is streaming, and we have big news coming for Cup of Salvation, our brand new SOM film that I know many of you have been waiting a long time for. The theatrical release is getting put together, and we're going to let you know dates very soon on that. Without further ado, let's talk about German wine law.
Hello, everyone. I'm Claire Kopy, and we are going to get very, very nerdy today, friends. I am joined by the lovely Amy Waller. Amy, it is always a pleasure to see you. Thank you so much for taking time out of your very busy schedule to chat with us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Claire.
Yeah, absolutely. Amy has worked in the hospitality industry for over 25 years, which is crazy to me because you look about 25. So I feel like maybe there's some kind of labor
laws. Thank you.
That's crazy.
There were labor laws in play. My mom had a restaurant and I was washing dishes by the time I was 12. So,
it's a good work ethic. I like it.
Yeah.
And you've worked at a number of restaurants in the Twin Cities in Minneapolis, including a James Beard Award winning restaurant, The Bachelor Farmer. Very cool. And now you've switched the education side of things. You're an educator and you work in sales for the German Wine Collection in 14 different states.
Yeah, I've got 14 different markets, mostly based in the Midwest here, where German wine does so well. It's really fun to be in this area. And then I've also got Florida and Maryland and D.C. just to kind of get me moving around the country a little bit.
Lots of different state-to-state liquor laws there. That must be fun.
So fun.
And you are also a Wines of Germany ambassador, which is perfect for today because we are going to get into German wine law.
German wine law, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm going to need your help with this just because it's been a minute since I studied this. And this is a German wine in general, but especially German wine law, I feel is a very, it's difficult for a lot of people to access. Why do you think that is?
You know, I think that there are a lot of pieces to it. It's very complicated. I always feel also like the language itself can be a barrier. And once we kind of learn how to navigate the language and the label, that's our foot in the door once we start talking about German wine law specifically. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, we have some changes coming up that'll make it a little bit easier. But when I talk to consumers, I first and foremost want to tell them, don't worry about the law. Worry about what's in your glass. Is it yummy? Do you like it? That's my first step with consumers. But as people in the trade, you know, leaning into that difficult wine law is going to get you really far.
Do you speak German, by the way?
I speak a tiny bit of German since
wine
I've
German.
Been. I definitely speak wine German. I've been working with Wines of Germany for about 4 years. And so I've started taking some German language classes here in St. Paul because it'll help me with my wine German, first of all. But also when I go there, it's fun to have that cultural component along with the wine and the history and the geology and all of those pieces as well.
And how did German wine become such a focus for you, by the way? I'm just curious.
When I started at the Bachelor Farmer, my mentor and my boss there, Aaron Rolick, had put together this beautiful, mostly Northern Hemisphere Eurocentric list. And, you know, there were 7 German Rieslings on the list. And I thought, she must be out of her mind. Like, there's no way we're selling. It is a bold move, right? There's no way we're selling that much German Riesling or German wine in general. And guess what? I was 100% wrong. I spent years dissecting what all of these different Rieslings were. I remember the first time I had a GG Riesling and what a light bulb moment that was, but also high quality Ausschlese and German Sekt, which was really a revelation, and German Spätburgunder, and all of these things that I had no idea German wine could be that. And because of that exploration, I fell right in love with the wines. And so my partnership with Wines of Germany has only pushed that. And then now it's my full-time job all the time, 24/7 German wine. Yeah.
And Riesling is such a wonderful, it's such a wonderful introduction to the Wines of Germany. It's certainly its most famous wine and the most planted grape in Germany. And it is cool to have a European country that is synonymous with a white grape, because we don't really have that in other countries. But Riesling, and specifically, I think most people's perception of what a German Riesling is going to be, this off-dry expression, is really just scratching the tip of the iceberg, right? There's so many different grapes, so many different styles, most of which is dry.
Yes.
You've got sparkling, you've got the sects. Let's get back to the wine law. I'm getting too excited about all the different German wines.
Yes. It's an exciting time where it's not just those fruity styles. It is dry Riesling, certainly. It is high-quality Sekt, whether that's from Riesling or Chardonnay or Pinot Noir, whatever that is. And then it's all the other grape varieties, so Spätburgunder or Pinot Noir, Grauburgunder, Weißburgunder, you know, Silvaner, Scheurebe, Sauvignon Blanc. We've got an incredible, diverse mix. And it's really exciting, not just to show consumers that, but also to show people in the trade where maybe they haven't checked in on German wine in years. This is the time to be checking back.
Just from my basic grasp of this new German wine law, which we'll get into more, I think that it'll showcase more of the variety that Germany has to offer. Because when you go back to these older wine laws, a lot of them are kind of centered around Riesling. Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah, I would say that's accurate.
So can you tell us a little bit about when German wine law first came into effect and what that system was like?
There have been several iterations of German wine law, but I think the most pronounced and the most significant was the 1971 German wine law. Historically, German wine law has been based upon this idea of ripeness, right? And specifically, we think and we go directly to the Prädikat system. And that system of ripeness, based on the Uxla scale, was put in place to create higher quality wines with ripeness, right? Because historically, they had a difficult time ripening grapes in this cool climate. I really can't overstate the influence of climate change right now, because in places where we've never had ripeness or it's been difficult to ripen, grapes are ripening now, right? And it's not just Riesling. It's grapes that no one ever felt could ripe there. You know, Spätburgunder, certainly Chardonnay. As our climate warms, this wine law needed to change because they're not struggling for ripeness anymore. Historically, we might get a vintage or two in a decade, and now 9 out of 10 are great vintages, 10 out of 10 are great vintages. And so I think it's really exciting that Germany was even willing to consider changing their wine law, because I'm not sure that every country or every region would be willing to do that. These changes are based on the fact that the climate is warming, quality is better than ever, and so they needed to get on the same page. They needed to get with it, essentially, right? With what's going on in the world right now. And that's ripeness.
And the more premium sites in Germany used to be completely based on that ripeness. If a site was, if the grapes there were able to achieve that proper level of ripeness, then that was considered a premium site, right?
Exactly.
And so now that's shifting.
And now that's shifting because we still need to recognize those premium sites, certainly. So we're not forgetting about them, but we also need a system for those sites that are ripening things where historically they couldn't.
What's happening now with this new wine law? What are the shifts? What are going to be the differences between the 71 and now the 2021 is when this started?
Yes, it was ratified in January of 2021, but there will be a period of time for them to get everything in place. So it will technically be fully live in 2026. So they've got a number of years to get everything where it needs to be. Okay. And the new system from 2021 is really going to be revamped to align with the EU PDO structure, as well as the VDP structure. So the VDP has had a structure in place similar to this for some time.
And what are these things? What is the VDP, just for people who don't know?
Oh yeah, the VDP is the Verband Deutscher Prädikatsweingüter, and it is an organization of producers within the country, a little over 200 producers. And the organization itself is committed to high quality German wine, but also promotion of German wines throughout the world, I would say. So we're moving into four classification categories, and the two most relevant for the American export market is Qualitätswein and Produktwein. Mm-hmm. But essentially, first, we've got Deutscher Wein. Produced in Germany without a geographic designation, very little is produced, and a very small percentage even makes it to the United States. Mm-hmm. So this isn't going to be something that you're going to see regularly.
Which is interesting to me, because I feel like in a lot of countries, when you have your, you know, without making too many comparisons, like a vin de France,
yeah,
you know, yeah, when it's grapes that can come from all over the country, I feel like you do see a lot of those exported.
That's a good segue into Landwein, which essentially laterals like vin de France, right?
Okay.
So technically, we'd call this like a PGI wine. So a protected geographical indication can be produced with geographical indication and comprises about 26 regional designations. That's about 10% of German wine production. This is where you get into a lot of natural wines that are out there that might not fit into a box. Those are certainly within that Landwein category.
Are you seeing a lot of orange wine coming out of Germany right now, kind of responding to that trend?
Yeah, definitely. We're seeing more and more orange wine all the time. I have one behind me that you can kind of see.
Oh, yeah.
This
yeah.
Weißengrau for Annelie and Mal. We love orange. That producer. So we're definitely seeing orange wine, whether that's from Pinot Gris, Pinot Blanc, Riesling. Occasionally you'll find like a skin fermented Scheureba, which I think is really interesting too. I know.
Gotta try me one of those.
Oh yeah, we gotta get you some wine.
I know.
Also within that Landwein category, we've got producers that for one reason or another, they wanna do things their way. And they might not fit into this Qualitätswein category. Hmm. And so their wines are either declassified in quotation marks, but either declassified or intentionally made to be more outside the box. And so that's where they fit into the pyramid, is in that Landwein category.
That's really cool to hear too, because this is a country that has such a beautiful history of winemaking, but you have this new, fresh generation of winemakers that are pushing the boundaries and the limits and wanting to play around and experiment and have fun. So you have this wonderful foundation and base of tradition, but starting to see some really playful, cool new wines coming out of Germany as well, which is exciting.
I know. It's in a really energetic time. You know, I'm always excited. So like, this is totally on brand, on topic.
Two Midwestern girls. Just really
I know.
Excited.
I know, we're excited about German wine. I think that the energy from some of these young producers that are doing things outside of the norm is unrivaled. And this is my specialization, but there are so few places that I think are doing what these young German producers are doing. They're really pushing boundaries. And yes, are we always going to have tradition? 100%. And I love that too. But energy and excitement coming out of these young producers doing different things is just palpable.
And to have their country changing the laws to make more room for that as well, from such an old winemaking country, that's pretty cool. So that was the...
That was Landwein.
That was the Landwein. So what do we move up to next?
So we're moving up to Qualitätswein. And essentially, that equates to a PDO, or Protected Designation of Origin. It's at the top of the quality pyramid and is further divided into designations by origin. And, you know, the philosophy here is really that French and Roman idea of the closer to the origin, the higher the quality.
Got that.
So within that, we've definitely got Produktwein.
Just to go back, the Qualitätswein are coming from the 13 different growing regions, right? Basically,
yes, the Qualitätswein are coming from the 13 different growing regions. And in German, we call those Anbaugebiet. Those are the regions like the Mosel and the Pfalz and the Rheinhessen and the Ahr and the Middle Mosel. And there are 13 of those throughout the country. Within the Qualitätswein, we've got the Produktwein. And the Produktwein scale is going to stay the same, you know? So what's important here is knowing that that's a subcategory of the Produktwein. But within the Qualitätswein, we've got some geographic categories as well. Are you ready? We can do it.
I'm trying to sort this out as well to make this as cohesive as possible. Going back, the Produktwein is again where it's the must weight levels.
Yes, the Produktwein is must weight levels, ripeness. Categories there are Cabinet, Spätlese, Auslese, Baron Auslese, Eiswein, and Trockenbaron Auslese.
So these new rules kind of swallow some of the old ones and keep them in there.
We're going to keep that Prädikats Fine Scale. It's just going to be a subcategory of the Qualitäts Fine Scale.
Got it.
It's not complicated, right?
It's not. It's not. Once you start chipping away at it, and especially, I think having visual aid helps with studying the German wine laws as well. And of course, a glass of wine.
Absolutely. The Wines of Germany, their website has been a lifesaver for me because they've always got them, the pyramids laid out. And so that is so helpful to see that scale. And it's not unlike other regions around the world. So I think it's set up properly, but the language occasionally can be a little bit of a barrier, right?
Yeah. I mean, once you look at that pyramid, like for anybody who's studied, you know, for wine exams, that's classic for any wine region. So it is very simple to absorb. I do think the language throws people off.
Yeah.
Just try.
I think so,
it's not
right?
Hard.
German's not so hard.
No.
And then we move into regional wines. From Bereich or Große Lage, a collective site that spans communes and districts, region is going to be taking the place of those two things.
Okay.
So instead of, you know, as a wine professional, we've taken all of our tests and we had to memorize all of these Bereich. The region is going to take the place of that word moving forward.
Okay.
Region is a little bit easier for us to say, right?
That is a lot
easier
to say.
I feel like everyone understands us when we say that, which is
nice.
That's true. So the name will include the region in front of the collective site.
Got it.
Then we're moving up and we're going into Ortswein. And Ortswein is just a village wine.
Okay.
So the name includes the village or district as designation of origin. It must reflect the characteristics of the local vineyards. It must be ripened to at least Cabernet level. It can be still or sparkling. And there's a requirement for when it can be sold. So it has to be sold after December 15th of the year of harvest.
Okay. So to give it a little time to relax and bottle.
Exactly. So we've started at Amaugebiet. We've gone to regional wines. We've gone to Ortswein.
Right.
And the fourth category is Einzellage or single vineyard wines.
Right.
And there are some subcategories there. So the name will include designation of single vineyards or the classified site with the village or district.
Okay.
But it can be further classified into two other familiar terms, which is Erstes Gewächs and Grosses Gewächs.
Yeah.
So familiar, so German, right? But I feel like we've all studied these things. So one essentially equates to Premier Cru.
We know that.
And the other, we know that, Erstes Gewächs. And the other equates to, Grosses Gewächs equates to Grand Cru, if we were thinking in the French scheme of things. So great growth, first growth. Erstes Gewächs is from a single vineyard or small parcel within a collective site. Selectively harvested. There are yield requirements. It has to be a single grape variety that matches the regional taste profile. Has to undergo a sensory evaluation. Minimum alcohol level of 11% must be dry and not sold until March 1st of the year following harvest.
Okay.
So those are our Premier Cru wines, right?
Yes. Didn't realize they must be dry.
Yeah. Yep. Then we go into our Grosses Gewächs or Grand Cru. And again, from a single vineyard or small parcel, hand harvested, low yields, not exceeding 50 hectoliters per hectare, single grape variety that matches regional taste profile, has to undergo that sensory evaluation again, minimum alcohol level of 12%, and it must be dry. And then white wines may not be sold until September 1st of the year following harvest, and reds not be sold until June 1st of the second year following harvest.
So these are all things that, this is, like we've already said, this is familiar stuff. These are tiers that we've seen that are in very similar structures with similar laws in other regions.
Yes, 100%. You know, when you're going through a certification or you're just doing wine studies to perfect your craft, these are the things that you're already studying, right?
Mm-hmm.
You want to know where your Premier Cru sources are. You want to know where your Grand Cru sources are. Yes, we have a different word for it, but you can always lean into that word, make it really special. You know, it's fun to have a different word.
And that is, you know, from the country that it's from. Because that's another thing that I've noticed is the labels have started changing with some of these producers to make them a little more accessible, a little more easy to understand, and sometimes even replacing the German name for the grape with an English name for the grape. So it's saying, you know, Pinot Noir instead of Spätburgunder.
Yeah.
Do you think that that's a good move on the whole? I mean, is it, there should be a balance, I think, to be found with still keeping the identity, right?
Yeah, I think so too. You know, a lot of growers are moving towards, for the American market, English specifically on that front label, right? I think that's really important. If we want to sell wine to people who don't speak German, we've got to give them English, right? Mm-hmm. Or the French equivalent or whatever that is. And so a lot of times on that front label, particularly for some of our more value price point wines, I'm seeing English there, right? This is Pinot Noir. This is Pinot Gris. This is Pinot Blanc. And we're seeing English there. Not every term is going to have a translation, although I see a lot of dry on that front label now too. It's not all Trocken that's there. Back label is where all the German tends to be.
Okay.
And I will say that some of the higher end wines, though, we're keeping the German on that front label. And that's partially for tradition, but also, you know, in my mind, really for the integrity of either that region or that site or that grower, whoever that might be.
Do you think, is there any pushback at all from some of the more traditional producers that want to stick to the old laws and the old ways? Or is everybody pretty much just embracing these and enjoying the fact that they can now be a little more accessible to the market?
That's a great question. And I don't have like a fully fleshed out answer for you. And here's the deal. So all of these changes have not been fully integrated yet. So I think they're still working on that integration, trying to figure that out. Thus far, what this change is going to do is really ultimately simplify things and also elevate a lot of different wines. And so while I haven't heard anyone pushing back, I can understand where they might in some cases. You know, if you've done things the same way for 400 years, maybe you don't want to change things. So I haven't heard any pushback directly, but it doesn't mean that there won't be some. And like with any change in life, there's always people that resist change.
Sure.
I'm sure that there will be, but I have not yet heard specific growers or producers speaking to that yet. TBD on that.
So these new wine laws, again, as you mentioned, are a reaction to climate change and also to consumer taste as well.
You know, historically, some of those fruitier wines were the most expensive wines in the world. They were highly prized.
Yeah.
And just like anything in life, trends change, tastes change. There was a time where those fruitier styles were in fashion. And consumer palates have and are moving towards drier styles of wine. I will say that occasionally I trick them with these fruity styles because they say they like dry. And guess what? If you give them a Cabernet with a good balance of acidity, that's what they really want. But we, you know, I don't trick them all the time, just occasionally. But yes, overall, consumer palates, particularly in the United States, have moved towards dry wines. And as such, and with climate change, the new laws are really catering to those two factors.
Like half of the production of German wines is dry.
Is dry, yes.
I think it's a huge misconception.
It really is. And, you know, I've had trade people really kind of balk at that as well, but about 50% is considered dry or Trocken, with another 20% being off dry or like Halbtrocken. And so for the most part, what is coming out of Germany is dry. And I find that a lot of Germans drink dry as well. And so really realizing the potential and still talking to both trade and consumers about dry Riesling from Germany. It is a thing, and it's a crisp, clean, refreshing, mineral-driven white wine with gorgeous fruit, and always having that conversation about, you know, food pairings and occasions for a crisp, bright, refreshing white wine.
And I got to say, the rosés coming out of Germany too are, holy moly, they're so good. So fresh.
So fresh, so good. I mean, rosé of Pinot Noir, sign me up for that all day. And then we've got Portugieser, we've got Dornfelder, we've got all of the little supporting grapes. But, you know, dry rosé of Pinot Noir from the Baden, like, okay, sure.
What do you think is like an upcoming region or style of wine coming out of Germany that people need to have on their radar?
Well, you pointed out rosé, and I think that's like, we're still always getting through the white Zinfandel fight in the world. And first of all, coming from Germany, I'm always having to talk about dry Riesling. And then when I show them a rosé, I feel like people assume that it's going to be sweet. You know, rosé of Pinot Noir from either the Baden or the Pfalz, that's like my go-to sushi pairing. I think it's just really outstanding. Doesn't overpower, goes so great with tuna or salmon. Oh, that's my favorite. Oh. Other up-and-coming styles, you know, German Sekt is having a moment, and it's going to continue to have a moment, and I am really excited for German Sekt. The quality is incredible. It's really, really outstanding in a way that early in my career, I had only ever had some of these more fruity styles and sort of more value-driven bottlings. And whether it's traveling to Germany or some of the producers that I'm getting here in my market, the quality level for German Sekt is through the roof right now because we have acid for the rest of our lives, right? So all we had to figure out, I mean, we do. It's part of the reason I fell in love with German wine and I love it so much is because I am an acid head and there is acid in this country and in every wine forever. These wines will all last me and I'm so excited, right? I will be on my deathbed and I'll say, bring me my Riesling, right? But German Sekt, so we've got acid in this cool climate region and they're making it from Riesling and Chardonnay and Pinot Meunier and Pinot Noir and using traditional methods. And these wines are, I mean, I hate to mention another region, but we've got another region in mind, right? Where we've got limestone soils, we've got traditional method, high quality sparkling wine. Wow. And they're coming out of Germany. It is so exciting.
And some of them, you know, a lot less money.
For a lot less money. For some of the Zecks, we've got sparkling Riesling, which I think is also really exciting because we've got fruit and we've got texture and we've got bubbles in Riesling. And could there be a more lovely thing? Great for food pairing. So Riesling Sekt, I find in particular, is an incredible food pairer. But also, you know, if we've got a more Chardonnay or Pinot blend, we can do a lot of things there. And just the quality coming out of these German Sekts, whether that's, I think of a couple producers in particular, Peter Lauer and Von Buhl and Robert Weil and Raumland and the Rheinhessen, you know, that those wines are legendary, you know? Those wines are, they're going to go forever. And the quality is really unparalleled. And I'm so excited about Sekt. Obviously, you saw me. I start talking with my hands. and then the other thing that's really exciting is Chardonnay. And so we're going to see more and more German Chardonnays coming. Again, I go back to the fact that I love acid and German Chardonnay. It's got all those friendly Chardonnay characteristics that you love. And then we've got just this very distinctively German acid backbone, acidity profile, right? In particular, we're seeing a lot of Chardonnay coming out of the Pfalz right now, but there's some planted in the Rheinhessen and the Nahe, certainly the Baden and Württemberg. And I think there's a little bit in Franken as well. So we're going to definitely see more Chardonnay too. It's really just an exciting time kind of all around. I get very
It's contagious. Your passion and your excitement for it is contagious. And it is, I mean, Riesling will always be a go-to from Germany. That there's no doubt about that. But there is just so much more that if you're only focusing on Riesling or only thinking that it's off-dry Riesling, you are just missing out on a dizzying variety of beautiful wines coming out of Germany.
And, you know, Spätburgunder as well. I feel like I have to mention Spätburgunder or Pinot Noir, right? I feel bad if I leave Spätburgunder out. Germany is the third largest producer of Pinot Noir in the world, which is shocking, right?
It is.
Only behind the United States and France. And Pinot Noir plantings are on the rise. And they are finding what works on which soil types, which clones. It is just every region, there is a different expression because Germany has such a varied, diverse soil composition. So we've got limestone and we've got volcanic soil and we've got slate and we've got, you know, loam, loess, clay. We've got all of those fun things that happen in the middle. And so all of these Schwebergunder representations too, it's fascinating to see what every region is doing on their own. And then we've got all of these different microclimates throughout. And then we've got acid and we're working with different barrel regimens, right? And so I feel like I said I'm excited about everything, but I guess that might be true.
That's fair. And now with climate change, we're able to see so much more possibility and so much more variety in the grapes that are ripening properly to be made into these beautiful wines and these laws that will now make all of them just that much more accessible. Thank you. Thank you for talking about the laws, because it's can be hard to wrap your head around. It's been a long time since I've studied them. So thank you so much for sharing that knowledge.
I mean, eventually it's going to make everything easier. You know, we're still figuring out these changes. Producers are still grasping them. But I think it'll provide a better framework for really understanding the origins and quality levels while also reflecting the shifts and certainly climate change.
Well, thank you again, Amy. I hope that I get to bump into you soon and we can share a nice high acid glass of Zecht Chardonnay.
Yes, Chardonnay. Yes, let's do it. I'm acid so excited.
Where can we find you on where can we find you on social media, Amy, so that we can check you out and bother you?
Yeah, please bother me. I would love to talk more about German wine law. I'm always still wrapping my brain around it. If you want to talk about German wine or Riesling or Chardonnay or anything in general, I am on Instagram at the only Waller of Wine.
Ooh.
That is my Instagram handle. Yes. I'm sure there are more of us, but I'm the only one.
She's
I know.
The only Waller.
So I am the only Waller. That's right.
Well, cheers. Thank you again, Amy. And your excitement is so contagious about this. I'm more excited about German wines, more excited about German wine law, which is just a huge feat. So thanks for getting nerdy.
I'll take it. That's a win. Thank you for getting nerdy. I appreciate it.
Cheers.
Cheers.
I want to thank everybody for listening. I hope you took notes. There will be a test next Tuesday on today's podcast. We want to know what other topics you want to hear us talk about. We love to get deep and nerdy on the wine stuff. So please hit us up wherever you listen. And if you love this podcast, leave us a great review. I want to thank Amy Waller for all her knowledge on German wine laws and the German wine regions. I want to thank Claire Copey, and I want to thank John Adams for producing this episode. Coming up on SOM TV, we have a look back at the 2022 vintage in Napa, which is soon to be released. It's going to be a great piece that's coming very soon to you if you subscribe to SOM TV. Everybody, please drink something nice. I recommend a German wine now. You need it. You've earned it. Talk soon.